That's the Soul Jazz Orchestra, right out of Ottawa, Canada, with People, People. It's one of my favorite songs. It seems to kind of get you going. I just love it. They throw in everything into the pot, soul, jazz, funk, R&B, Afrobeat, Latin rhythms, and anything else to come up with message music. People, People is from their 2008 album, Manifesto. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. It is Thursday, August the 13th, 2015, and I thought I would follow up my discussion yesterday on media monsters and the monster media, how winners are made. We're picking up from where I left off yesterday with discussing what is being marketed by the media as the phenomenon of Donald Trump's presidential bid. The backdrop to the super saturated coverage of Trump is a story in itself, but a story about intertwined interests. The intertwined interests of big money, power, the manipulation of public attitudes, and the railroading of what we commonly discuss as the democratic process. In this rough and tumble world of American politics, these things have become a natural part of the landscape. But I especially bring your attention to the media's role in this election cycle, because it is astoundingly egregious. All the more so because it has unabashedly laid bare its collusion with a corrupt system and a process that deserves greater scrutiny. And it has done so with apparent approval across the board in the industry. They all seem to be okay with what's been going on. Well, I talked yesterday about how presidential debates historically had been managed from 1976 until 1984. The League of Women Voters, basically a nonpartisan group, give or take a little bit, shift here and there, but they had handled presidential debates as a kind of they had no skin in the game, if you will. And then came that huge problem in 1988 when the president of the Women's League, the League of Women Voters, said that they were going to withdraw from the process. Why? Because, she said, the campaigns, the respective campaigns, although, of course, all of this is within the context of the duopoly, the Democrats and Republicans, that they had conspired, essentially, to commit a fraud on the public. And the League had no intention, the president said, of becoming an accessory to hoodwinking the American public. These were devastating charges. They cooked up their own rules behind closed doors, and they placed all kinds of provisions and codicils and outrageous, they call them outrageous anyway, demands that the League of Women Voters just would not abide by and never did abide by for the years that they handled debates. So they were out in 1988. Well, that created a vacuum. And guess what? The duopoly stepped in and decided, oh, great, we got rid of an impediment here. So we are going to establish the Citizens Debate Commission. All right. Now, these are the Democrats and Republicans, political foes, one would assume, at least that's what we're told. So they establish this entity, the Citizens Debate Commission, in 2004, and they set a whole new set of rules as to what are going to cover these presidential debates. And then they got fed up with the whole thing, and they bowed out. But guess what? The media stepped in. The media as an entity stepped in. And that's what we have now. The media basically setting the rules for all these presidential debates. And it varies. They feel this way today. They feel that way tomorrow. There are no set rules for the debates. But in fact, we have discussed here, there in fact are set rules. We just are told very differently. So what, in effect, the media did, and this is the way we should see it, is that they supplanted the public interest. They supplanted it. They just came in and took it over. And they decided to insert themselves now, and we have to see it this way. This is not impartial reporting. This is not even reporting. This is utter and complete control of the public's interest and so-called right to know. Now, when the League of Women's Voters was handling these debates, it was not a monetized event. There was no money associated with it, not like now. When they were handling these debates, it was strictly in the interest of the public interest. Now, we could have all kinds of discussions as to really whether that happened or not, but we are talking here, giving you the context of how these things worked. You know, advertising budgets involved and all this kind of stuff. The League of Women Voters staged these debates as a service to, quote, democracy, unquote, informing the electorate. This is what's happening. These are the candidates. This is how they're feeling about particular subjects and so forth. But the media, immediately after it took it over, monetized it. Now, why is that a very, very grave thing? Supposedly, we have a Federal Communications Commission, and supposedly the Federal Communications Commission has some rules about the public interest and public information and the role of media in informing the public. And there is a thing called standards. They established standards that the media would hold to, not only in terms of debates, public debates, but across the board. Access to the airwaves. And the FCC specifically has rules and regulations about access to the airwaves and the duty, the obligation of media to provide access to the airwaves by individuals who have something to say, especially in the course of national political debates, and the right of citizens to know. See? So it's not like they have no interest here. They have an obligation to fulfill. And at the local level, this comes in the way of what we would call public interest or public affairs programming. And the media, all of them practically, established mainstream media, have absolutely jettisoned this provision, this obligation, this legal obligation they have, because they have licenses issued by the FCC. This is part of the obligation as a public information entity. You have to provide programming and pay attention to the public's interest. At the local level, you may see these kinds of programs totally gutted. In New York City, where major media outlets, television outlets, were compelled by law to provide public affairs programming because of a history of racist information disfranchisement. They never paid attention to Black, Latino, other minority communities at all, except, of course, covering them from a pathological point of view in their news programs. And they systematically have gutted all, practically all of their public affairs programming. They're not really informing the public specifically with respect to their unique informational needs. They're not doing that job. Why? There's no money in it. There's no money in it. If you're from New York, you must know the program Like It Is, hosted by the late Gil Noble, a very good friend of mine. And systematically, they just destroyed the program. And it seemed that they were very happy when he died, because now the program has been transmuted into something that is and should offend the sensibilities of any person with a thinking brain. Give them nonsense. Give them stuff that has nothing to do with their unique informational needs. You know, let's talk about, you know, who's the latest rap group to come along. I'm not offending rap groups. But what I'm saying is the unique informational needs, the discussions, for example, about police brutality and about police murders, these things are not part of the discourse in public affairs programming at all. But I digress. Let's get back to the subject. The fact is, when the media as an industry intervened and took advantage of this opportunity here, they understood why. They knew why. Because it was about big money. Big money. Lots and lots of money is associated with presidential campaigns, and especially when you have other races being run, you know, Senate campaigns or congressional seats and so forth, and coinciding with local elections. This is huge money. It's a gold mine, literally. So they took advantage of the opportunity, zoomed in, supplanted the hosting of these debates. They sat down and carved up the turf among themselves, as we see here in the 2016 election cycle. You have Fox News, which is leading all of the media at the moment, calling the shots, essentially. It's gotten to host three of the debates that will be held. You have CNN, a distant second. You have the others in there. But they're all pooled in. They have agreed to monetize these debates. Supposedly, these debates are the commitment by these various news organizations to provide the public with useful information. No, 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 no. These media organizations have agreed that the value of these debates is to revenue, generating revenue. And this is why this particular cycle is going to be so critical. We have every major organization studying advertising budgets saying this is going to be a record year. This election cycle is going to be a huge, huge treasure chest for campaign advertising. And these folks are so hungry because a couple of things have happened in media. Mainstream television, first of all, television is the number one preference for campaign ads. Now, digital advertising has grown, but not nearly as significant in the advertising campaign budgets as mainstream television, and, you know, including cable. It's still the preferred, it's still the number one avenue for advertising. So we have the prediction that as much as $5 billion will be spent. This will be the most expensive presidential campaign in history this year. Big money. You're thinking, oh, well, this is about politics. No, no, get that out of your head. This is not about politics. This is about money. Big money. And they got to make their, they've got to make their share of it, because it's going to happen only every, what, 4 years. So they, the only thing after presidential campaigns to bring in huge amounts of money is the Olympics. And that's every 2 years. So they can't afford, because viewership of mainstream media is down. They've been losing revenue. They've got to make up for that. And they have these multi-million dollar hosts that they're paying. I discussed that yesterday about the salaries that they have to pay these people. They've got to compete now also in a world of media conglomeration, media buying up other media. And the reason they're doing this is to be able to have several bites at a time of anybody's advertising budget. See, this is how it works. So this is huge. This is a big, big, big thing. And the debates provide, and the coverage of Donald Trump and all of that, which is all being used to stoke the fires. It's that's why Donald Trump is getting this coverage. Is it because Donald Trump is that unique? No. Is it because Donald Trump is that insightful and visionary? No. Donald Trump is just stirring the waters up. And it's good for media business. It's good for them, because they get to now press the buttons of all the people they intend to target for advertising contracts, commitments. And this now is hundreds of millions of dollars at stake. They get to say, look, this guy is ahead of you. He's got 23% of your voters in his hands. What are you going to do? They're not discussing Donald Trump's political philosophy. They're not subjecting his campaign to close scrutiny. They're not doing their jobs as media people. That's not what they're there for. They're there first to land the contract, get the commitment to spend hundreds of millions of dollars of advertising from those people who look like they will have the money to pay it. Rick Perry didn't look like he had the money to pay it. He's out. He's not even paying his staff. He's done. But Jeb Bush looks like he's got the money. Donald Trump looks like he's got the money. Hillary Clinton looks like she's got the money. And so you will see coverage of these individuals more than you would see of any others, even if they're not particularly relevant. Even if they're not saying anything important, even if, as in the case of Donald Trump, they really don't even have a viable campaign. Do you realize that? Donald Trump does not have a viable campaign in the way that the media would insist that any presidential candidate should have some kind of evidence that you have a viable campaign. He's talking stuff. He's running around and tweeting and saying outrageous things and doing all of that stuff. That does not make a viable campaign. And certainly with the expertise that exists in the newsrooms of America, something is a viable campaign or not, whether something is a story or not. So he fires off some, he says something silly about China, and he says something silly about this one and something silly about that one. And somebody in the newsroom, who is paid very well to be editors, for example, those people should be able to say, well, that's not a story. Donald Trump firing off his mouth and yammering and, you know, cussing people out and saying all kinds of crazy things, these things are not stories. We used to be able to tell what a story is. But in the interest of money, they will overcome any kind of editorial objection. And they will actually persuade the public, this is the fraud that they're committing as an industry, that there's something real and important happening here. There's nothing important happening there. But if Donald Trump burps today, it will be a headline tomorrow. How does this happen? It happens because the corporate leaders are telling the editorial gatekeepers, this is what has to happen in order for us to corner the sale. So that by the time we sit down across from Donald Trump, we'll be able to say, look, we did 45 stories on you in less than 2 weeks. We provided you with so much airtime. We provided you with ample coverage. We have given you solo status. You're the sole person being interviewed on our top shows with our top hosts. And that translates into X hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars, in free advertising and marketing for your campaign. Now, what are you going to give us? Here's what we want. We want, there's an app, what's your budget? We know that you have a budget of, let's say, $100 million. We want 80 million of that. We deserve 80 million. And that's how it's done. The media people who present themselves, as Megyn Kelly talked about herself as, you know, I will not back down, I will continue to provide free and fair journalism to the public, had no problem subjugating herself and accepting Roger Ailes, her boss and the CEO of Fox News, his edict. You will, in fact, we'll have Donald Trump on your show. And you'll pretend that all these nasty things that he said to you just simply don't matter. In fact, that's good journalism. In exchange for that, what does she get? She gets Roger Ailes support. Roger Ailes has to come out publicly now and pronounce her the queen of all media. So she doesn't mind the insult. She's not going to protest. She can't protest. $6 million a year or $7 million a year is, number one, riding on her obedience and her expected, basically, acceptance of Donald Trump's outrageous behavior. And on top of that comes the added benefit of being elevated in the world of journalism. I was the person tackled by Donald Trump, and I stood my ground. Therefore, I am the queen of all media. Yes, so my salary should now go up to 8, maybe 9 million, because there's, you know, in terms of equity, you take a look around at Fox, and you see Sean Hannity, for example, making a lot more money than you. You see, what's his name, the blowhard there. Oh, God, I'm blocking on his name because I block on his thoughts. Making a lot of money. And, hey, there is suddenly you are aware of the gender inequity at Fox. and the salary inequity that goes along with the gender inequity. This is how it works, folks. This is not about journalism at all. This is about the industry basically functioning in a very, very outrageous way. And they're not telling you this, but they have conspired essentially to dupe the public. And they have decided to subject themselves as journalists. They have decided to accept the corporate priorities over the so-called sacrosanct journalistic responsibilities. The journalistic responsibilities should say, well, wait a minute. Why are we now suddenly controlling a debate? Why are we controlling a debate? What is the purpose of controlling a debate? Because it leads to so much money. We are now part of a corporate machine. We are no longer journalists, because make no mistake, as I mentioned yesterday, those hosts of Fox who faced off against Trump and others, 17 others, 17 candidates in all on August the 6th, they themselves are companies. They themselves are corporate entities. So we have a corporation functioning within a corporation, and they all share the same objective, and that is profit. Yeah, they'll tell you, well, we're journalists and all of that stuff, and that's good. But you look at the evidence, and you see, you ask the question, on a consistent basis, do these people function in a way that subjects the system to close scrutiny? Do these people function in a way that suggests that their concept of journalism is even remotely linked to the public's right to know? No. They are serfs within the feudal kingdom of their respective companies. Here's an interesting thing I would illustrate the point with. A headline. Will astonishing ratings for Fox News debate lead to increased Republican primary turnout? It's a headline. First of all, what's the point of asking this question? Except that you plant the idea, and you implicit here is the suggestion of a link between Fox News's astonishing ratings with the benefit of the Republican Party in terms of voter turnout. I mean, they're telling you we have no reason to guard our intention here. We have no reason to excuse our role. This is what we're doing. This is what it has become now. We are extensions of the system and its interests. We are corporate extensions. And this is the kind of thing that is passing for journalism here. They're telling us that they are servants of the PR machine of whoever it is their respective news organizations are telling them they have to cover favorably. Do not negatively affect anybody that we want money from. Do not upset anybody we expect to do business with. Do not, at this point, when the contracts are not yet signed and the deals are not yet negotiated about advertising dollars, do not do your job, essentially, as a journalist. But many people go into media understanding the limitations of their jobs. They don't get to call the shots. The legal departments of their respective organizations call the shots, and the corporate leaders call the shots in terms of profitability and the relationship between profits and coverage. So, I wanted to stress this point because you are likely to regard this pap that is being served up every day as news. It isn't. It is simply a demonstration by the various news agencies of their pledging their troth, if you will, to the folks with huge amounts of money. They're in search of that huge chunk of the $5 billion that is expected to be spent this year. That's all that is. Now, they're willing, and this is why I believe they are accountable, and they are engaging in what, in 1988, Ms. Newman, the head of the League of the League of Women's Voters, Nancy Newman, said is a fraud. It is a fraud. They're perpetrating a fraud using the presidential debate to do it, the presidential elections to do it. And they're masquerading it as something viable and valid and actually legitimate. None of this is legitimate. They have crossed over. In fact, not only crossed, they have flown over. The media have just crossed the line en masse. We are about money, make no mistake about it. And if we have to, you know, contrive something to hide and disguise what we truly are about, that's what we're going to do. And that's what's going on right now. So when people tell you, oh, Donald Trump, this is Donald Trump, in my view, if I were in a position, an editorial position that these media organizations, there will be no stories about Donald Trump. Except, well, the first story, he declared his candidacy and that's it. Nothing he has done so far. After just formally declaring, nothing he has done so far is worthy of coverage. It's just being silly. And he has forced the media, and they have decided that they will go with it. He has forced them to run on his program. This is what he wants to do. This is what he wants them to do. And it's all about, if we do this, will we get the money? It's the money. So far, editorially speaking, journalistically speaking, there is no rational reason for coverage of Donald Trump. Certainly not at this level. This over coverage, this super saturated coverage of Donald Trump is absolutely not warranted. We would be more, I think, more in line to say, well, geez, what are the other candidates thinking? What's this thing with Donald Trump? They actually have position papers, whether you like them or not. They have position papers. They have a full-fledged campaign staff. They are running around from place to place. Donald Trump is just tweeting and talking, you know, as James Brown, the great philosopher, would have said, talking loud and saying nothing. He's a blowhard. So why elevate this man, except that in a very clear way, they see a vested interest in being very, very servile to Donald Trump and his alleged campaign. That's what I mean. You have a campaign? Great. You have position papers? Let's talk about that. I'm not interested in discussing what you think about people and who you think is a loser and who you think is... That is not news. That is the stuff that belongs in a psychiatrist's office. Go someplace and figure out why you see the world that way. Why you have been carrying this psychotic strain for so long. That belongs there. In terms of news, there's nothing that you're saying that actually has impact, except that people think it has impact because your name is Donald Trump. Okay, well, great. You know, the people who think you are the greatest thing since sliced bread, good for them. But as a journalist, nobody could tell me, could rationalize to me this supersaturation of coverage. Plain and simple. I challenge anybody to tell me what is the news value of the coverage of Donald Trump? Well, I'll pause here and we'll take a break and let's hear your thoughts today about the subject. We have 2 days of this subject, so I imagine there's some things you want to say. At 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. We'll come back and talk with you right after this. Listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead, and it's time for your calls, your reactions, your thoughts at 888-874-4888. Tomorrow, as you know, is Free Your Mind Friday, so you get to talk about everything you want to talk about. Today, let's concentrate on the subject of this, the role of media in this current presidential election cycle, its role in how it is creating environments and realities that seem to conflict with what we know. And the question should be, what then is the reason for the persistence of the media along these lines? What's going on with them? Is it that they lack the kind of professional help in determining what's a story and what's not? Is it that they have a different kind of agenda now? What is the deal here? And why is it that the media isn't looking at itself as an industry in the way it is performing as an industry? This is a very serious subject. We're talking about it topically, but this really is a pivotal point. I would advance a pivotal point in the function and role of media. I mean, it is so pronounced to me. I'm wondering whether it is with you. From New York, Joel, you're on the air.
Hi, Eutrice. How are you doing today?
Great, thank you. How are you?
I'm very fine. So we have the phenomenon of the Trump candidacy, and of course you've brought up the important subject of the Trump candidacy as a reflection of the social pathology of corporate media. And, you know, it's just a phenomenon that has been going on for a while. I think I mentioned this recently when I called about how elections, almost all elections, with some exceptions, are really not about anything. They're simply about what politicians call values. And real issues are never discussed. I remember there was a candidacy for Biden's seat in Delaware when he decided to run on the Obama ticket. And I forget her name now, but a young woman was running, relatively young. And the election was really about her desire to be a witch when she was a teenager. Do you remember that? That's all they spoke about. So this is not a new phenomenon, but you know, the Trump candidacy interests me for another reason, because in many ways it reminds me of the Wallace candidacies of 68 and 72 and even of 64. In fact, nobody remembers this except historians, but Wallace, I'm speaking of George Wallace. You know, remember the governor from Alabama in the 1960s and 70s? And when Wallace ran in 1964, that was, you know, 6 months after Kennedy had been assassinated, everyone knew that Goldwater was going to get the Republican nomination. And all the polls showed that Johnson was going to win an enormous victory. And yet Wallace ran in the Indiana and in the Wisconsin primaries, you know, just north of Indiana, north of the Mason-Dixon line, a lot of racism there. And Wisconsin is, after all, the home of progressivism. It's where Robert La Follette came from. And yet Wallace, in the primaries, with Johnson getting this tremendous sympathy vote, that would have, because of Kennedy's assassination, and the country experiencing a kind of liberal hour anyway. Everybody knew that the war on poverty, which was planned for a second Kennedy administration, and the Great Society legislation, all of that stuff was in the pike. And yet Wallace polled something like 34% of the vote in Indiana and close to 40% of the vote in Wisconsin. Now, why did this happen? It happened because there's a residue of white working-class voter sentiment that's willing to gravitate to a demagogic candidate, primarily because of their fear and hatred of the African-American population. That's really what it's about, and that's why Trump is doing so well, and it's one of the reasons why Fox and other news outlets feel that they can make so much money off him.
Well, I agree with that, but I wish you could, if you could indulge me a little bit, and
sure.
Talk about how does this explain the media's conduct so far in this campaign?
Well, as you said, that these people are amoral to the bone. Their interests, they're all careerists, corporate careerists, and that is their, I agree with everything you said, that is their primary interest. They never want to cover real issues, because if they covered real issues, all of these candidates would be exposed for what they are, nothing more than vacuous appendages of corporate power. So, and since the media is part of the corporate nexus, I think you were raising an even deeper issue than the very specifics of the corruption of these corporate journalists. I think it goes deep. It really raises the issue of what a democracy is all about. And I remember when I was a kid in the 60s, and I used to wait avidly for I.F. Stone's weekly to arrive. I.F. Stone was a great, for people who don't know, great independent journalist who exposed many of the crimes of Vietnam, and who famously said, "All governments lie." And he could have also said that all corporate media lies as well. If they're not lies of omission, they're lies of distortion. You know what I mean? So the real problem that we face in our culture, I think, that relates to the important issue that you're raising today, is that in a real democracy, journalism should be not an appendage of power, but should monitor power and, where necessary, challenge power. I mean, if you think of the American and French revolutions, the great pamphleteers of the French revolutions, I think of someone like Tom Paine, Common Sense, the American Revolution. I mean, the newspapers were firebrands in, of course, both revolutions were anything but perfect, but I'm thinking more of newspapers and journalists as a kind of a fulcrum of revolutionary activity. And so in a real democracy, journalists should challenge power when necessary and certainly monitor power. Instead, we get journalists who are nothing more than appendages of power. And that's the real problem. So the independence of journalism in the United States is really threatened. And that's why we all have to turn to alternative media like PRN and whatever else we can find on the Internet to find what's really going on. Because these people cannot separate themselves from power and authority because they are part of it.
Thanks, Joel, for your call. And thank you so much for your always, you're on point. Thanks so much. From Los Angeles, DX, you're on the air.
Hello, Utrecht. How are you today?
Hi. Great. What are your thoughts?
Well, I absolutely agree with what you're talking about with the media and this whole involvement with this whole election cycle or whatever you want to call it. And but I can't say that I didn't know this all of this already. And what I feel is that it's just corporations taking over everything. It's been like this for years. I've known this for years. It's just that it gets worse and worse. And what I call is just like it's reality TV. You know how reality shows, there's not very much reality in reality, so-called reality shows. It's all mm-hmm. nonsense. There's not very much reality to it. So I think this is what this is. We're just living in a reality show culture. And there was a term that was made up because of the TV show Happy Days. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about, but in the later years of that TV show, I believe the early 80s or very early 80s, they kept trying to get their ratings back up. They kept trying to boost their ratings. So there was a phrase, there was an episode where Fonzie got on some skis or something and was pulled by some kind of boat, and he jumped a shark. and this is where this term comes from, jumping the shark. So I think mm-hmm. what we see right now is that there, for one thing, like as you indicated, there's a lot of money in this for these media outlets, and also they're trying to outdo each other. So mm-hmm. we reached a real moment here this time around where they've completely jumped the shark, and everything that they put in front of you just about, it's just nonsense. There's no reason to even be talking about it. As you indicated about Donald Trump, listen, I have no interest in knowing anything about Donald Trump, not even his policy points. I don't even want to know anything about any of the Republicans. I did not watch the debate. In fact, I'm not even interested in this election at all, Democrat or Republican, because we know what's going to be the outcome. Hillary Clinton's going to get nominated by the Democrats. Bernie Sanders is going to make sure of that, because his role in this whole thing is to keep you in the Democratic Party. I haven't been a Democrat since 2001 or something. I'm what they call in California a declined state. So it's, to me, this is all nonsense. I think all federal elections are rigged, and they're just phony. And I don't know why anybody in their right mind would take any of this stuff seriously on the federal level. We still have a chance to vote locally.
But DX,
we'll do that.
But DX, the evidence suggests millions of people are taking this very seriously, and principally because of the media's role. I have to ask you the same question as I asked Joel. What do you hinted at it earlier, but what do you see as the media's role here in creating? You talk about the creating a reality that doesn't even have reality in it. But beyond that, do you think that the media's role in any way is how could I say, has crossed a line here?
Yes, and that's what I'm saying about when I referred to the jump the shark moment. That's the moment where you know, or anybody with half a brain knows, that we've gone over the cliff here, and this is what we're seeing this time around. They're talking about 95% nonsense, and this is what I'm talking about. And the reason why millions and millions of people are taking this serious, just to allude to the first point you made. The reason why millions of people in this country are taking this stuff seriously is because they are, quote-unquote, out of their mind. Like I said, anybody in their right mind is not going to take this seriously. See, people have been conditioned, most people in this country, I don't think anybody listening to your show really takes any of this nonsense seriously, but millions of people do because they've been conditioned to accept this nonsense, this reality show culture. And it's just gotten this way over the years. But like I said, we have reached that moment, that jump the shark moment, where it's just totally ridiculous. And that's why I have no interest in it whatsoever.
Hmm. What is it in your circle, let's say, what do you assess your reaction as? Do you think that you are, your views are commonly shared within people, the circle of people that you know, or do you think that you have a different point of view?
I have a sort of a semi-diverse group of friends. Some of them are devout Democrats. couple of them who are females, black females, they're going to vote for Hillary, and that's the foregone conclusion. Some of them, they know all this is nonsense, and they just hate Republicans, so they're going to vote Democrat. Some of them are of the way of my mindset, but they just don't know what they're going to do because they're going to vote, I think. They're not like me in that regard. They're going to vote, but they're going to make the choice of basically the lesser of two evils, I think, is what they're going to end up doing, like most people. And then me, myself, like I said, I will not be casting a vote federally for anything, not even statewide, because I think California politics are screwed, too, just like New York state politics. I will be voting locally.
Well, do you think things would change anytime soon, or do you expect more of the same?
Oh, no, I think we're pretty much done. I mean, I've said it before. The system in this country is just going to melt down. And, you know, something's going to happen. We're going to reach some kind of moment where either the whole system's going to crash and break down, and we're going to have some kind of alternative in place at that time, or it's just going to continue to deteriorate and get worse and worse, and it's going to be basically a living hell in this country. But
thanks for that cheerful outlook.
Well, you know me. That's my role, to make you happy. To cheer you up. But
well,
no,
thanks so much for your call today, DX. I appreciate it.
Thank you. I want to hear from other people,
thank you.
Too.
Yes. I expect that this would continue tomorrow, this discussion, and others, when we get into our Free Your Mind Friday mode. But we're batting two for two here. We had two incredibly insightful opinions shared today on the subject. And the reason I followed it up yesterday's discussion today, is that this, I feel really apprehensive about where we are in the scheme of things, because information is power. Information is power. And the lack of information, conversely, is directly related to a lack of power. Information shapes attitudes. Attitudes influence decision-making. And when we have an institution that long has held itself to be a kind of guardian, a safeguard against the excesses of our society, a kind of, a safe zone that we could trust that they're doing the job of informing the public. And yet we see in this particular situation, in the presidential election of 2016, we are seeing the media behave, I mean, just in your face. They're not even hiding this stuff anymore. They are out there and they're telling you, this is where it's at with us. We are strictly about the money, and we will use any and everything at our disposal to do that. And the people who present themselves to us as these, forthright stalwarts of journalism are in fact in service of their corporate headquarters, telling them exactly what to do. Their corporate headquarters and the corporate owners working hand in glove with the Democratic Party and with the Republican Party, with the duopoly that we talk about all the time, to shape in a predictable way what the electorate is likely to do. And this is egregious. It is just plain wrong. It is so bad. And it is all the more so because the industry is not talking about it. And here is a fantastic opportunity to rein themselves in, to check themselves, and more so for consumers of information, a reminder that you always have to be on point and be really careful about the kind of information
that you ingest, because a lot of it is loaded with agendas that have nothing to do with your benefit. Thanks for joining me today. I hope the program was of interest to you and benefit to you. Let's join each other again tomorrow. And in the meantime, please know it is a pleasure and privilege for me to be in your esteemed company. Keep it right here. The Expanding Mind with Eric Davis is up next. We'll see each other tomorrow. Bye-bye.